Robert Mulligan was the most beloved resident on Pine Grove Lane. Robert and his late wife, Ethel, had built their small but tidy two-story home in the late 1970s and had lived in it ever since. Robert was kind, mild, helpful to all the neighbors, and was dubbed the neighborhood grandfather. He had taken a sudden turn a few months back, but after a few weeks in bed and some very close calls, he was back to pottering around his home. He wasn't the same as he had been before the sickness. He felt physically fine, but his mind did feel a little foggy. He was forgetting things, getting lost in time, and his house felt different. Considering he was 85 and living alone, he wasn't too shocked, but he certainly was confused and becoming a little fearful of being in the home alone. It had all began when Robert realized items were going missing or moving about the house. This wasn't too alarming, as even he had come to accept that his short-term memory was abysmal these days. Next came the noises. The sound of footsteps or moving furniture. Robert would survey the home with his cane in hand, feeling like a scared child with a baseball bat. But of course, there was nothing there. He tried to reach out to his sister or nephew to ask their advice, but he couldn't seem to catch them on the telephone, and he didn't feel up to leaving the house. Next came the voices. Sometimes they were distant whispers, unintelligible hisses or garbled mumbles. Other times, it was as if people were having a conversation in the room he was in. He daren't tell his doctor. They put old people away for things like that. And Robert wanted to stay in his home. One evening, after a long day of mysterious noise, heavy footfall, and disappearing items, Robert retreated to his room, curled up under the covers and prayed the house would settle. However, it wasn't long before Robert awoke to the sound of a radio errantly flipping through channels and white noise. The discordant sound was coming from the living room, and with it was the sound of human voices. There were people in Robert's home. Cane in hand, Robert descended down the stairs. He wasn't crazy. There was something happening in his house. The home that he and Ethel loved so much. He had to confront it. Terrified and trembling, Robert tiptoed down the stairs. In the living room was a circle of young men and women, huddled around a candle and a collection of devices all blinking and beeping. Robert was stunned and absolutely petrified. What was going on in his home? With all the strength and energy he could muster, Robert yelled, "Leave my house! Get out of here! Don't you realize? I'm just an old man!" Suddenly, all the lights on the devices glowed red and green. The flame on the candle shot high up into the room, and the flickering radio screamed, "Get out!" Robert was terrified. He scurried to the corner of the room and sank to the floor and held his cane in front of him. One man called out, "Who are you?" "Leave me alone," Robert cried. "Are you Robert or Ethel?" a young woman asked. "I'm gonna call the police. This is a crime." "Please, can you speak with us?"
"Just take what you want and go," Robert frantically bargained.
"Tell us why you're here," another youngster asked. With this, Robert stood. He was furious, scared, and did not want to be terrorized in his own home. With his cane, he began to hit the group, throw the flickering devices, and yell, "Leave my home! This is my house! How dare you do this to an old man?" The group scattered, fleeing the room, crying and shrieking. Robert fell to the floor himself, exhausted, frightened. He closed his eyes and prayed for the Lord to keep him safe. Pine Grove Lane had always been his safe space. A week later,
In a shabby downtown office, the group of amateur ghost hunters presented a Mr. and Mrs. Rainsford with the findings from the couple's newly acquired home on Pine Grove Lane. "You've got yourself a wicked one in there. Evil he is. I don't know, man, maybe even demonic. We were all physically attacked. And just wait till you hear the EVPs." "I'm so confused," Mrs. Rainsford stammered. "Everyone said the old man who lived there was lovely."
"Maybe he was. Or maybe he was secretly up to no good. You never really know what your neighbors are up to. But all I can tell you is there is some horrible, dark energy in that house."
"That's the thing with homeownership," said a female investigator. "You can have a piece of paper that states you own the land, but that doesn't mean that you have dominion over the spiritual space." Happy New Year, West London Witch Coven. I hope you have all had a wonderful holiday season and have had a happy and healthy start to 2024. I'm not really a New Year's resolution type of person, but this year I've thought long and hard about my goals and dreams for 2024. I have three main goals. One, to expand our audience across new platforms like YouTube. Two, create an episode on Dark Disney. And three, to grow and nurture our Patreon community. Patreon is a space where, as for little as $1, €1, £1 a month, you can support Danny and I to continue to create the West London Witch while getting access to loads of additional spooky content. There are different tiers for different levels of donation, but everyone gets access to the same fantastic content. Our goal has always been to make our Patreon a space that is affordable, fun, and personal. If you're in a position to donate to the show to keep the scary stories coming, I would be honored to have you join our Patreon. But I know times are tough and finances are tight. If you'd like to help out the podcast in a totally free way, tell a friend about us. Share the West London Witch on your social medias. And don't forget to rate and review the show on whatever podcast streaming service you use. All of those free actions really do help grow the podcast, and it means the world to me. You can find the West London Witch on Patreon at patreon.com/ The West London Witch, or hit the link in the episode description box. Hello and welcome to episode 64 of The West London Witch, a podcast where we share stories about those moments where we find ourselves very much not alone. A lot of our patrons have told me recently that they love to hear the personal stories of paranormal investigators. So today, I have a treat for you. With over 50,000 followers on Instagram, you may already know Malia Molino, or Macabre Malia, an LA-based historian and researcher. Perhaps you've even seen her on the TV show Haunted Discoveries. But today, Malia tells us about her personal journey with the paranormal and the strange twists and turns it has taken. I'm Rebecca Strazina, and this is The West London Witch, episode 64, Macabre Mysteries.
So I grew up in Seattle, Washington, in a Victorian fourplex. And as a child, it was my most favorite place, but it was also the place of my nightmares for many different reasons. There was the four main apartments, and I lived on the bottom right one. And it was beautiful. It had dark wood. It had pocket doors. It was humongous. And it had this terrifying hallway that just used to petrify me as a child. And it wasn't just because it was so dark. It was because it just had this feeling, the kind of feeling where you innately know something is wrong here, which was really frustrating because I loved my house. Like, it was a very cozy place. And most of the house I felt very comfortable in.
Malia slept in the front bedroom. From her bed, she could see directly into the dining room, another space in the house that really unsettled her.
I was always terrified of my bedroom. I would sleep with the lights on. I hated being in there. I hated the closet. And I would beg to sleep in my parents' room, which was the back bedroom of the house, because that's the only room in the entire house that I always felt completely safe, like nothing creepy, no weird vibes. I could be there when it was dark and it wasn't scary to me.
In contrast to her parents' room, Malia's bedroom felt dark. She felt as though she was never alone in the room and as if someone was in there watching her constantly.
And apparently, I've now since learned, my mom said that when I was really little, I used to say that people were talking to me, which is even more terrifying as an adult, thinking back to little Malia and, you know, she has little people talking to her. But the strangest thing and the thing that ended up making my parents switch bedrooms with me is I was plagued with nightmares almost every single night of a little boy hiding underneath my dining room table. Now, that doesn't sound so scary when you say it out loud, but if you're a lucid dreamer like I am, and I specifically was as a child, I was very well aware that I was awake, but I was awake in a dream, and I was in a dream that looked exactly like my apartment. And so in my dream space, I was sitting in my bedroom that looked exactly the same. All my dolls and stuff were everywhere. It was as messy it was as it was in real life. And I'm laying there looking into my dining room, and there's this little boy. Oh my God, I get goosebumps even thinking about it. I'm like getting flustered because it's so disturbing to think about. But he's just crouching and he's just staring at me. And he doesn't take his eyes off me. And in the dream, I can't move. I can't do anything about it. I don't run out of the room. I just sit there and I'm paralyzed in fear.
This terrifying dream of the little boy watching Malia from beneath the dining room table plagued her for 13 years. She didn't have this dream once or twice, but rather all the time. That is, until her parents swapped her bedrooms. Once in her new room, the nightmare never occurred again.
Now, what's so terrifying about all of this to me is my mother has now since talked about all of the weird things that she had seen in the apartment that she never wanted to admit because the building's now been torn down and they live somewhere else. She used to see, because in our bathroom, if you were looking at the mirror, you could see down the hallway, and she would see people walking up and down the hallway. And when we did switch bedrooms, and she was now in my horrifying bedroom, my poor parents, she would wake up consistently, like actually wake up, not be in a dream, and she would hear people talking in the dining room.
Malia's parents never doubted their daughter's experiences. They themselves had a deep-rooted belief in the paranormal. But after her own frightening experiences in that front bedroom, it was clear to Malia's mom that her daughter wasn't just going through a phase of nightmares.
Jump forward. I'm living in Los Angeles. I start researching historic locations for a living and for my own entertainment because despite all of my fear, I am so deeply fascinated by the history of locations and of people. And for me, it was always less about investigating a place, which I had never done a paranormal investigation until I got on Haunted Discoveries, was really, you know, what could potentially be the reason why a house is haunted or a landmark is haunted? Like, who are the people? Who built it? What was the land? That's the stories that I wanted to tell. But the one place that I refused to ever research was my own house, the place that I grew up in, because I had this deep-rooted fear of, oh my God, what if it was real? And the more I started researching locations, the more that fear grew.
One sunny afternoon, Malia and a friend headed into downtown LA for a spot of tea.
And I had noticed that she always kind of looked, when we were talking, she would look to the left of my shoulder a lot. And I just thought it was a tic she did. I'd never really thought much of it. And one day she interrupted me in our conversation. She's like, Malia, I have to tell you something. I don't want to freak you out and I don't want to change how you like view me, but I feel this is something you need to know. And of course now I'm terrified. I'm like, oh God, like what's she about to drop on me? And she tells me that besides being an actor, her and her twin sister are both mediums. They speak and communicate with ghosts. It's not something they publicize. It's not something they necessarily love to do. But she's like, you have a spirit attached to you. And I don't know where he came from. All I know is he came from where you grew up. And she knew I was from Seattle, but I had never told her the story. I never told anybody anything about this, like this little boy in my dreams, except like my best friends from school. So instantly I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm like, and I'm just frozen. I'm not saying anything. And she's like, this person followed you and they presented themselves to you as a little boy.
Malia froze. She was shocked. There was no way her friend could have known about the boy underneath the dining room table. Now Malia was properly worried and frightened. She asked her friend if this little boy was bad or dangerous even.
She didn't say he was bad, but that he was possessive, which is in a weird way even creepier to me because it means there's like an emotional attachment there. And she basically just suggested that I protect myself. So I started wearing a lot of crystals. I tried to do some energy healing. And I never really sought someone specifically for it. I just kind of wanted to, you know, backpedal it. Just, okay, it's somewhere. I'm wearing my crystals. I do my sage. All of those things.
At the time, Malia was hard at work on her YouTube channel. Many times during interviews, mediums and psychics would stop the conversation to give Malia a rather unsettling message.
I always get, you have something dark attached to you, and it's been with you your entire life. And this is happening over and over and over. I don't know what to do at this point. And in the apartment that I was living at the time, here in LA, which very strangely resembled my apartment that I had grown up in Seattle, I start waking up in the middle of the night a lot because I feel an energy in the corner of my room. So this just keeps getting worse. It just keeps getting worse. And so I start actively talking to it. Like I keep waking up in the middle of the night. And for the first time I address this feeling, this thing that I feel is following me, because it really did feel like there was a momentum building and more people were acknowledging it.
This was a strange time for Malia. She was going through a terrible breakup and her own stress and anxiety levels were high. The presence of this little boy was feeling much stronger and she wondered if he was feeding off of her own high energy and emotion. She began to set paranormal boundaries. She told him he had to leave her alone, vacate the space, let her get a good night's sleep.
Then I did another podcast and it was remote. And the woman I was talking to does remote viewing. And of course, like clockwork, she brings up this possible entity that's attached to me. And she asked if I wanted her to communicate with the entity, like remotely. And it was crazy because she accurately described the room that I was in and where he was standing, which is where I had been feeling him. And she, it was, I could see her struggling and she was trying to communicate and she just kept shaking his head and she's like, he won't go, he won't go, he won't go. And then she has a conversation with him, like through her spirit guides. And ultimately she says, okay, I can't get him to leave your apartment, but I got him to leave your bedroom.
This wasn't exactly a total success, but Malia was satisfied that perhaps it was progress, a step in the right direction. The little boy may have still been in the house, but she couldn't feel him in the bedroom anymore. And finally, she could get an uninterrupted night's sleep.
So I just, again, I shove it in a box mentally somewhere and I'm like, okay, at least I'm sleeping. I'm not having these nightmares. what can I do about it? Like, I don't know how to get help for this. And I'm also too scared to seek help for it. And I end up getting engaged to another person. We move into another apartment where I've never had a creepy feeling at all. And I'm taking that all as a great sign. Like, okay, maybe moving, maybe being in a happy mental place. No longer does he have the power. He's not here. Maybe he can't be possessive because I'm engaged. I don't know. I'm finding all these reasons in my head why it might not be still happening. So that gives me the courage to finally research my home apartment. You know, was this person real? Can I find anything about it? I look up my address. I do my usual researchy thing. And there's one article on my apartment. And it's about a little boy who fell off my balcony at 3 years old. And his name was Victor. And I just sat there and I did the almost like movie style, like laugh that turns into a cry. Because the one thing that my friend had said when we had that conversation over tea, because I did ask her, I said, do you know his name? She goes, no, but I know it starts with a V. So to look at this newspaper article and to see that this child's name was Victor, it was an experience that left me with so many more questions. Like, why me? Why attached to me? Was it because I was a child? And it was just the first time that I had experienced a real interaction with a person that had lived and had an accident in a place that I had been. And for whatever reason, followed me into an adulthood.
Once Malia had gotten over the shock of the discovery that Victor was a real little boy connected to her childhood home, she felt a sense of release. He was no longer a scary entity following her around, but rather someone's child, a loved one, a friend, and a real person with a real story.
That's something I think that has really carried with me and has completely changed how I view the paranormal, how I view historic locations, because where I grew up was a historic location.
The irony that Malia had spent much of her life trying to escape the paranormal and now features on a paranormal TV show is not lost on her. She now sees her experience with Victor as a gift. It has changed the way that she researches and thinks about the people who once frequented the spaces and landmarks she now investigates. It did take a lot of convincing to get Malia to take part in the actual investigation and not just do the research for the show. But after she set some ground rules, she decided to broaden her horizons.
So when I got on the show, I made it very clear that if I didn't feel safe in the space, I wouldn't go in, because that's my biggest trigger, where I really do feel like I can feel the energy of a place really easily. And so when we were doing the show, mainly in Kentucky, at locations that have some of the most horrific and tragic histories you could ever imagine, you know, you have to protect your intuition, really. Like, that's how I want to say it. Like, you have to protect your intuition because you can feel if something is bad. You can feel if the energy is going to affect you. And there were definite locations where I think all of us, even our crew, was really affected. But there was one place in particular, this place called Hall Place in Kentucky, and it was this bed and breakfast.
Hall Place is a historic bed and breakfast located in Glasgow, Kentucky. The home was built in 1852 as a wedding gift from Judge Christopher Tompkins to his daughter, Theodosia, and her new husband, Dr. James Hall. Judge Tompkins actually later died in the home, and the rest of the family moved out in 1861 to avoid the Civil War. Haunted discoveries had come to investigate claims of Union soldiers haunting the inn.
And it was so interesting because all of us, it was the only locations we had done that season where we got there and we all said, this place isn't haunted. Like, just nothing about it felt that way. It didn't have the energy. We had done 7 other locations at that point and it just didn't feel like it was active. And it was almost, we were almost excited about it. Because we're like, okay, we can showcase what it's like to go somewhere and we won't get anything. Because we also have to document that. Like, you're not always going to get things when you go to a location. And I was also kind of relieved because we had done a lot of locations. It's a lot of weird stuff that happened. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll go in. I'll do my interviews. We'll do the investigation. This could be easy peasy.
Easy peasy, it was not. The team was trying to confirm or deny activity connected to the Civil War. But there was a much more recent death they had been expressly told not to discuss. The last innkeeper of the B&B, Caroline, had recently passed, and due to her still having living relatives, the new owners did not want her death or potential spirit to be televised.
So we weren't going to. We're doing our investigation. Nothing is happening. And Mustafa and I, just knowing we're not going to use it, but let's just see for our own research. If we mention the last owner, are we going to get anything? And all of our devices start going off. And we look at each other like, oh. And then so at this point, we're not researching for the show or we're not investigating for the show. We're doing it for us because at this point, we really don't think we're going to use it because we were specifically asked not to mention this person because there's still family alive in the city. So we end up having this interesting back and forth with the EDI. We have to go down for our cameras with the charge the batteries. We take a break. I go down to nerve center. Brandon and Mustafa go back up. They take the tripwire. And I'm sitting at nerve center downstairs thinking, oh, that's interesting. Like maybe Caroline is here, you know, and not really feeling any other weird vibe. But about 45 minutes goes past, which is a lot longer of a run than I would have expected them to be on. Brandon comes downstairs like charging down. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, you don't understand. It's crazy. It's getting crazy up there. I'm like, what do you mean it's getting crazy up there? And he tells me that they have had the most insane tripwire activity we've had yet on the show.
A tripwire is a string of lights that flash when they detect movement or changes in EMF. A ghost can use them to answer yes or no questions, or they can show movement of a spirit in a specific space, like down a hallway or through a bedroom.
They're getting direct responses. They've asked control responses. They've asked control questions, I should say. And they know for sure that they are talking to Caroline. She's aware that she's passed, and she's aware that she's still at her house.
For the first time, Malia was excited about the prospect of a paranormal encounter. She had researched Caroline extensively, and now she could ask her direct questions.
And everybody was kind of stationed outside of this back bedroom, which we knew was the room that she used to stay in. And we had the tripwire going all the way from the beginning of this kind of billiards room to the headboard inside the room. And Mustafa was standing there and he's like, we've already established that this is her room and she doesn't want anybody in there. So I walk over and my instinct just tells me to introduce myself to her and to ask her if it's okay that I'm there. And I do. And all the lights on the tripwire go off. And I'm like, okay, thank you, Caroline. You know, thank you for letting me be here. Is it okay if I sit here? So I just sat on the floor and she did a couple lights. And for the next hour, we proceed to have a conversation through lights with this woman. I think for me, what really struck me the most with our conversation with Caroline was that she was aware that she had passed. And I think all of us, like Brandon, I remember at one point said, if you've ever wanted to ask a dead person something, like, this is your time. But like, what do you ask? You know, and you also want to be respectful, but there is that sense of, oh my gosh, like I'm having this rare opportunity to commune with somebody that's on the other, the quote unquote other side. What does she know? What is she feeling? So I really wanted to know, was she there by choice and was she lonely? And what I got from that interaction was that she was aware that she was there, but she was lonely. And one of the largest responses we got was that she wanted to be with her parents. It just hit me so much. And it's a crazy thing to try to articulate what that experience was, because our crew was crying. I was crying. It's in the trailer. You could see me having a meltdown because it was just so, it was so poignant, and it was so far from any kind of scary paranormal experience that you'll see in a lot of the shows. This was beautiful. It was kind. It was human. It was real.
This encounter was so beautiful that the owners reached out to Caroline's family, who were delighted to hear that their loved one had come through. They gave permission for the experience to be shared and even did a last-minute interview for the episode. However, as lovely as that experience with Caroline was, Malia would soon find out that not all interactions with the other side are heartwarming, kind, and moving.
We were at this incredible, stunning old Victorian home in Old Louisville that is now a part of an arts academy. And most of the house doesn't look like a house anymore. It's all been kind of renovated into offices and conference rooms. And we had been there all day. I think we had a 12-hour day that day. And we had, for the first eight, it just felt like nothing. Like the house itself is almost Winchester-y because there's hallways where there shouldn't be hallways. There's weird doors where there shouldn't be. There is an element of confusion to the house that I will say can aid in any kind of strange, creepy feeling just because you feel uneasy because everything is kind of misplaced. But the top floor where a lot of the offices are really just felt benign. Like, it's just, okay, there's a room. We had a lot of control cameras set up. Nothing felt weird at all. Then things just changed. And I don't know how else to describe it. Like, things absolutely just, I don't want to use the word sinister, but to me, that is how it felt. Like, the energy went from being calm, cool, benign, to absolutely sinister. And I was deeply, deeply uncomfortable.
The team had their nerve center, or home base, if you will, for the investigation at the bottom of the staircase that led up to the second floor offices. Our old friends, Brandon Alves and Mustafa Gadolari, were investigating the second floor where the activity was really ramping up. Malia and the sound director were downstairs, but the energy shift was palpable.
I could tell that things were happening and the energy had changed. And I was already feeling at the bottom of the staircase. And then he just looks at me. And I just knew in an instant, I was like, oh my God, they're going to make me go up there by myself. Which, on our show, full disclosure, most of the time we have a camera person with us. We don't hide that. We have our camera person with us. This was different. These were solo runs. This was you completely by yourself with a GoPro and you're filming yourself in the darkness. And to be honest, and you'll see it in the episode, I say no. They come down and they say, we want you to go upstairs. And I say no.
After some convincing and giving herself a little pep talk, Malia agreed to investigate the upstairs all alone.
I get halfway up the staircase and I have full body goosebumps. Every hair in my body is standing up. Every part of me is saying, do not go up there. And not just, and you have to work really hard over mind over matter. Like, am I just scared because it's dark, or am I scared because something is seriously not okay? And I stood there on the landing and Brandon's like, we're right down here. If anything happens, we're not far away. And I'm like, okay, Malia, get it together. We can do this. I go up, I head into the office that we had been in 1,000 times that day. It's ice cold. I feel so uncomfortable. I'm trying to film myself holding the EDI to see if we have any kind of changes in the atmosphere. And as soon as I start talking, I start getting hits. Our pressure is changing, our temperature is changing. And I feel a scalding, burning heat on my back, like hot.
Never before had Malia experienced anything like this. The scalding heat was so severe she called out in pain as her EDI meter, or environmental detection meter, began to show changes in temperature, EMF, vibration, and air pressure. Something seriously strange was occurring.
I know something's happening. I'm too terrified to leave. They run up. The activity kind of calms down. They tell me to stay. I don't want to. I go against my instinct. I stay. And it's just that feeling of something consistently being behind me. The heat wouldn't stop, and you just felt like somebody was right behind you. And I walked out of the room. I attempted to go deeper into the area upstairs, and every time I tried to cross a threshold, I got hit with a huge wave of dizziness. And at this point, I'm on carpeted, uneven floor in pitch blackness. I let the guys know, I'm coming down, I keep getting dizzy, I don't feel safe, and I don't want to hurt myself because something happens and I need to run. I can't run in this atmosphere. So I go back downstairs. that experience completely changed how I went into any other location, because now I had experience like, oh, things can get physical. It can be unexpected, and never take, like both of those locations actually, never take what you feel when you first get somewhere as what's really happening, because the atmosphere of a place can change in an instant. And so I think for me, that's ultimately what my paranormal journey has kind of been, was I started out in complete fear, the point where I blocked it out. And then I went on this journey of, I guess, a paranormal self-discovery, if you will. And I had some really beautiful, validating, healing experiences. And then I just got blinded thinking that things would always be happy and benevolent and sweet experiences. And it got scared out of me. It really did. It taught me that just like in life, people can be bad and people can want to scare you and people can want to hurt you.
Malia is much more cautious now. When she leaves an investigation, she makes sure to close the door, leave whatever is in that space there, and she protects herself from any unwanted hangers-on.
And I've kind of left a lot of those places, kind of honest to God, questioning the, I don't want to say morality, but in a way, kind of the morality of going into a person's space and asking them to communicate with you. Because if they were living and you barge into their house unannounced, you know, you're going to get a reaction.
Malia brings up an exceptional point when she questions the morality and ethical nature of ghost hunting. Imagine if someone came into your home, set up odd contraptions, and then asked you endless and deeply personal questions. It's a lot to ask of someone. Even if you're approaching investigations with the utmost respect and care, there is a possibility that the sheer act of investigating could be scary, traumatic, and sad for the spirits being investigated. And if the spirit in question does not realize they have passed, of course, you could have a really frightening or misunderstood encounter. This is not a perfect science, and a delicate approach is prudent.
As a whole, my big overarching lesson of all my paranormal experiences is to never lose the humanity and the people that have been in the places that, you know, were there before you were ever there. And to always show them respect and to never, ever, ever expect them to do what you want them to do, because they don't need to.
I really appreciate Haunted Discovery's approach to ghost hunting. They're not out to sensationalize or dramatize paranormal activity, but rather aim to share the stories and histories of the people and places they visit. We all have stories to tell, and some of us are even lucky enough to tell them from the other side. If you'd like to check out more of Malia's work, head on over to Instagram and give Macabre Malia a follow. While you're over there, don't forget to check out the West London Witch Facebook and Instagram page. Do you have a spooky story you'd like to share? I'd love to hear it. Drop me an email at thewestlondonwitch@gmail.com or find us on Instagram and Facebook at thewestlondonwitch. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. And come and follow us for additional content on Instagram and Facebook. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. The West London Witch is created by me, Rebecca Strazina. Our sound designer and production magician is the incredible Danny Cross. Our theme music was bespokely written and performed by the wickedly talented Kyle Hall. Our cover art is the beautiful collaboration between Lizzie Wilson and Jake Bowser. Special thanks to Miss Sinead Bowers, our quality control and biggest cheerleader. And thank you to you,
all of our listeners all over the world. These are your stories. Thank you for sharing them with us.